A warm welcome to our Thursdays with David Foster Wallace series, where we every week take a look at the infamous Infinite Jest with the hope, of course, of finishing the novel, which we already did, by the way, we did it last week. Today we have for you the first of the hashtag TDFW after episodes so that we can continue our search in investigating this novel further. And the question we have for today is, drumroll please, who narrates Infinite Jest? Now, before we get started in earnest here, I would like to give a quick shout out to my wonderful patrons. You guys are awesome, and my patrons have been keeping some secrets with me about which after episode topics we will be doing in the upcoming month of September. If you too want to share in on the secrets and chat with me, your host, on a monthly basis with a podcast and a live stream, go ahead and go to patreon.com/relevanceofliterature to learn more. I am in many ways a product of the 21st century, and I thought, where else would I start than with a plain old Google search with today's question, who narrates Infinite Jest? And the answer pops up as Hal Incandenza. And yes, Google, thank you for that. Hal Incandenza is absolutely one narrator for Infinite Jest because we start out in his first-person narration at the beginning of the book and get back into it where Hal is using those good old personal pronouns near the end of the novel. That part, at least, is pretty obvious, so a round of applause goes to Google. Another obvious narrator that we have, at least in certain BS 1960 and 1963 sections of the book, is a young Jim James himself, or Dr. Incandenza, who also narrates in the first person in these sections, interestingly giving us a window into some of young Jim's earlier developments. And keep the back of your memory on these sections here because they will prove quite useful to us later. The bulk of Infinite Jest, however, is clearly not narrated in the typical fashion by a character alive and well in the novel with a completely limited, locked-in, first-person perspective. In fact, the novel's narrator is an entity that can read major and minor characters' thoughts, but also doesn't have a totally omniscient or objective perspective either, as the way that accents and dialects are transcribed in the novel, as well as the way certain facts, events, and retellings are written. They're really deliberately erroneous and imbued with a perspective of a narrator. And another perhaps useful question for us to consider is, who is the most useful narrator of Infinite Jest? I hesitate to lead with the topic of usefulness or need to know in this novel, because while the novel has tons of small gems that end up being useful to us some point later in the novel, there's also a lot of irrelevant information, at least what I consider irrelevant, that TDFW adds to postmodernize the writing stylistically. Imagine that this novel is a tapestry, and as the tapestry maker, DFW had control over much of the process. The form or shape of the tapestry, the word choice or color choices, the stylistic or pattern choices, but at the end of the day, it's still a tapestry, and DFW couldn't change that fact. As a novel, Infinite Jest is still constrained in many ways by the fact that it's mostly written in words in English with the Roman alphabet, that there are typological formatting and other errors, and by way of it being a DFW novel, there are also a lot of side tangents and characters and scenes and Lyle that are put in there merely for stylistic effect. In short, again, it's not always pertinent to look at usefulness when it comes to this or any other novel. However, when it comes to figuring out the identity of the narrator, there's a really good argument connected to usefulness and utility for this particular situation. Let's first run through the list of people I considered for the position of narrator. Hal Incandenza, of course, James Incandenza, Avril Incandenza, and Lyle. Going out of order here, as I mentioned earlier, Hal is a narrator for a while in the beginning and in the end of the novel, and considering the tone of Hal's narration, which is neurotic, self-absorbed, and relatively tautological, I ruled him out pretty quickly for the bulk semi-omniscient sections of the novel. Indeed, as we readers know, we know Hal well enough by the end of the novel that we can readily assume that even if he was just making educated guesses about the thoughts and situations of other characters, he doesn't have the means or closeness or motivation to, for example, follow around Gately and reasonably narrate the novel. So because we know so much and have so much first-person narration from Hal, it's relatively easy to do a compare and contrast with the bulk narration of the novel and rule him out entirely. Moving on to Avril, I wanted to consider her here because I wanted to include a female perspective, even though, similar to Hal, Avril herself is so self-absorbed and quixotic that it would be fairly obvious and not useful to us or DFW in the slightest if she were the narrator of the novel. To me, it does also seem that the narrator is coming from a male point of view here. There's very little that's feminine about the narration of the novel. It's not delicate or reserved, and also doesn't draw attention to items in the narration that I feel a deliberately female perspective would pick up on. I wish I could be more specific, and I know that I'm relying on stereotypes from literature here, as well as my own experience as a woman, but the narration definitely doesn't feel feminine to me, at least not in a distinct way. When I think of a feminine perspective, I think of Virginia Woolf's fiction, as well as her Diaries of a Writer, because her fiction is very restrained, while her diaries are a little more pointed and brutal, for lack of a better word. So I think that she gives a large range of what a feminine perspective can look like in writing, and I'm using my experience with her work as guidance here for Infinite Jest. Now, the last two potential narrators are the trickiest, and believe it or not, I really had to sit down and think about the differences between the two. As you all know if you've been listening to the series, I've always been particularly aware of Lyle. He's my favorite character in the novel by far, a very unique, albeit mysterious presence at ETA and in other narrative threads, but I do think that what's tricky about considering him for the role of the narrator is that he does seem to be purposefully written as one-dimensional in the novel. That being said, though, he does make an appearance as a wraith in the hospital with himself when he's caught licking Gately's forehead, and that scene late on in the novel told me that there is more to Lyle than potentially meets the eye. The Schwartz Conclusion article linked in the description alludes to himself's probable influence over Ortho Stice and takes into consideration Stice's nickname, the Wraithster, from the novel's manuscript. I have a hunch, though, that Lyle's usefulness as a wraith-human hybrid could also put him in a position, say, to put a mysterious Coke can on Gately's head for himself, if needed. Is Lyle's position as a wraith-human hybrid enough to count him as a potential narrator, though? And for me, the answer is no, particularly because of that carefully written one-dimensionality that DFW seems to include with regard to Lyle. So now it's up to me to prove, with textual evidence, of course, that himself is the narrator of Infinite Jest. Before we get into that, though, I have a couple of observations that really helped me with figuring out the narrator of the novel. First is that a big part of my literary past is invested in Kurt Vonnegut, who often writes from the perspective of Kilgore Trout, his alter ego in many of his works. Trout is a failed science fiction writer with wild ideas, and often shows up as a minor character in Vonnegut's novels, and in the case of the Rosewater novels, is Eliot's hero, even though he and his work remain largely undiscovered in the world of the novel. And I think that Jim and Condensa is to DFW what Kilgore Trout is to Kurt Vonnegut. Himself in the novel is described as a freakishly tall protege with high waters and glasses, as a character who is also an alcoholic and commits suicide. There are a lot of similarities here. DFW was also, might I mention, a star tennis player in his youth, as was himself. The other thing that struck out to me was tone. The tone of the sections narrated by the young Jim and Condensa were really familiar to me when I came across them because of their similarity in style to the bulk of the novel. Young Jim is a bit more naive and doesn't have the omniscience of his later iteration as a wraith, but the things they focus on in their respective narrations and get lost in are incredibly reminiscent of the narration proper. I also find myself thinking that DFW was the one narrating the novel at certain points, rather than one of the internal characters, because the narrator's tone and the way the novel progresses is just textbook DFW. In other words, when I was looking at the tone and the style of the novel cross-comparatively with the other DFW books I've read, I found that these two features were strikingly similar to his other novels. It also makes sense because the narrator has to be someone both interested in and connected to all of the narrative threads in some form or other, and who else but the author himself would fit that, right? Also, when we consider consider the usefulness of having the creator of the world himself narrating, guiding us through each thread, I have to admit that it was a pretty enticing claim to entertain while I was in the middle of reading this novel. The problem with all of that, however, is that there are a few features of the narration that I've mentioned previously that fit with the idea of DFW narrating about as well as the idea of a square peg fitting into a round hole. If DFW himself is the narrator, then why inject deliberately racist, for example, erroneous, tangential material directly into the heart of the narration? In other words, why limit the narration to the extent that it's limited and not omniscient and also not present throughout the entirety of the novel? Also, why introduce himself as a wraith who can read minds and possibly influence people to move stuff around and have other ideas, if not for the clue that it could solve the question of the narrator? Getting into the more textual part of my argument, when I look at Infinite Jest as a whole, I see a book that's ultimately about the broken relationship between Jim and Hal in Condensa. A book that outlines a father's mistaken views about his son and vice versa, and his, the father's, misguided attempts at communicating with his son and getting his son to communicate. There are, of course, two main narrative sequences to Infinite Jest, one belonging to ETA, where we come in direct contact with Hal and a symbolically present himself, and the other at Ennit, D-A-R-H. As an aside, there is also a much shorter third narrative sequence, of course, between Meraith and Steeply, which gives us vital information about the world of subsidized time in Infinite Jest, clears some things up about the world, etc., and that narrative thread has connections so deep and numerous to the other two that it wouldn't help the argument to list them, as I'm about to list the connections here. The two main sequences here are tangentially related to each other with help from small, yet mighty overlapping connections. I'll list a few. Gately, a staffer at Ennit, kills the mom's lover M. Duplessis accidentally, providing that when himself goes after his enemies through Orin and the entertainment throughout the novel, he's got one less person on his list. In the second half of the novel, Hal shows up at Ennit seeking help for his addiction to weed, and Jeanette, another staffer, leads him on a highly disturbing misadventure, really paralleling himself's experience, in my opinion. A pair of patients at Ennit also work at ETA, which is locationally just down the hill from the DARH, and those patients end up bringing copies of himself's entertainment, including Infinite Jest, to Ennit. Joel Van Dyne, a newly recovering addict and Ennit House resident, had a close relationship with both himself and Orin, and has visited the Tennis Academy before. Look, the farther one digs, the farther down the list one goes. I'm going to take the connections between the threads a bit further to say that himself is actually connected to every thread of the narrative in some way or another, whether it be directly or somewhat indirectly. Assuming that himself is also somewhat goal-directed towards the point of getting Hal to communicate, the roundabout, twisted way he tells Infinite Jest also makes sense to me, where DFW, and therefore himself as well, put the motivation of the novel right at the outset with Hal's seizure episode of not being able to communicate, and then moving on in a non-linear yet realistic and very human way through the complicated story of how things got to that point and whether or not they can be expected to recover. The narrator, a wraith that moves faster than light and eventually reveals himself to Gately in the hospital, gets sidetracked and likes to pontificate, but why else did DFW write his extensive additive ed notes at the end, if not to have a hand in helping his alter ego tell the story of his masterpiece? In total, himself's myriad connections to each narrative thread, as well as DFW himself, Jim's BS 1960 and 1963 first-person narration similarities to the narration of the rest of the novel, the human qualities of error, transcription, opinion, and tangents, balance with the inhuman qualities of being able to read thoughts, have a selective semi-omnipresence, and influence actions, and the unlikelihood of any other character or being able to foot the bill for narration, all lead to my conclusion that Dr. James in Condensa is the narrator for Infinite Jest. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from us, there is a show and a series for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our website, relevanceofliterature.com, under the ongoing series tab for links to our entire back catalog of episodes.
We also have a couple of open surveys that you can find through the links in the description, so if you have 3 minutes while you're waiting in line somewhere, we would very much appreciate your feedback on our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, and we'll see you next time.